it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
In a texter ask, hey, Casario's superstition is exercising before the game. Do you guys have any superstitions before the game? I actually do. And it doesn't involve exercise. Before every home game, I go to Avalon Diner for breakfast.
Yeah.
I get a veggie omelet with fruit instead of hash browns, white toast, and bacon, not crispy, chewy bacon, coffee and water. I get ready for the pregame show. I drive to the stadium. I play the same playlist. I've got like two or three WWE themes. And then as I'm arriving at the stadium, I'm playing Boys of Fall by Kenny Chesney, big football song.
Mm-hmm.
Park in the same spot every time in the teal lot. And then I walk into the stadium. I stop and I see John Harris before going out to the stage to do the pregame show with you. I always stop and see John Harris because, A, he's my friend, and, B, he's always got a few nuggets. You know,
that's true, yeah.
You chit-chat
you know
with
though?
Johnny for 10 minutes, you get educated on the sport.
I wouldn't classify any of those as superstitions. I think that's more of a routine that you're in. And you like having that routine because
it's the worst. Well, actually, I've ever heard.
No. If anything, I'm giving you a compliment. It's because you understand the importance of routine at times,
yeah.
Especially when it gets you in the right mindset. It reduces. You don't have to think about all those other decisions that you might otherwise have to make. Where am I going to eat before the game? What am
That's
I going to do? How am I going to get all that? That's more routine. I had this conversation with Chris Palmer, who was the offensive coordinator for the Texans early on. I remember sitting with him just chatting about somebody asked a question about superstition. He, me, and another player were waiting to go into a team meeting. And I told, I was like, I don't think I'm superstitious, but I do like to do this a certain way every time. And he's like, no, you like routine. That's what, which is good.
Cause okay.
you know how to get yourself ready in a certain way. And, the one superstition I had was, for whatever reason, one road trip, I had forgotten my toothbrush, so I had to use a hotel toothbrush.
Yeah.
And I had a good game the next day. This would definitely be a superstition.
Okay.
Yeah, so from that point forward, I always used a hotel toothbrush. But I also carried an extra hotel toothbrush just in case the hotel was out of toothbrushes.
Well, you know, when you were in Tennessee and Indianapolis, they didn't have toothbrushes in the hotel because they don't have any teeth in that state.
That's where they were named a toothbrush because there it's one tooth. Yeah, it's not a teethbrush.
Exactly.
It's a toothbrush because it was invented in Tennessee.
Okay.
No, so I would... Listen, I had NFL money back then, so I could afford a spare hotel toothbrush.
Right.
It was a spindly little mess
times
where 18 of the bristles
come out
of your
mouth.
Times
are tougher now that you're in radio.
So that was a superstition.
Okay, so mine is more of a routine, but I do feel when I break the routine.
Yeah.
And the Texans lose, I feel partially responsible for that.
Okay, that's a superstition.
Yeah.
If you think your routine has an effect on the team outcome,
yeah.
Okay, that is a superstition.
And it's dumb.
All right,
it's
Sean.
Really stupid.
You know what?
Yeah.
Sean, I was looking at it through my own filter. I thought you were concerned about, you know, putting on a good show and holding yourself to a high standard
No.
So you had a routine. I didn't realize that it was unselfishly about the outcome of the team.
No, it's the outcome of the team. The good show is a mere byproduct of the superstition that I have. Yeah.
Okay, it's all a superstition.
Yeah. I enjoy it because I love going to breakfast before games.
Do you have any other superstitions like while watching a game or anything on television that you have to open your beer a certain way or anything?
No,
like that?
Nothing like that. Although I sit in the same chair. Like Amy she's sitting in my chair when a game is on. She has to get out of that chair. I sit in the same chair every game. That's the closest
thing.
That's
more of a comfort level.
That's the closest thing. Yeah, you're probably right.
Well, it's like in Silver Linings Playbook. Is that the name of the movie, the Bradley Cooper one? The Robert De Niro is very superstitious about the Eagles.
Yeah.
Like, everything has to be just right, and he very much believes in it. Which is weird because he's also a bookie in that, which I feel like a bookie should not be... I feel like, he's an amateur bookie. Okay. I feel like you should have a better understanding of probability and everything than that. But yeah, that's where he was with it.
Nut and Clear Lake said, did you just say chewy bacon? I don't mean like raw bacon out of the fridge. I mean, I don't like it like crunchy. You know, I like it to have a little bit of, I like to have a little bit of chew to it.
Can you order your bacon a specific way?
At Avalon Diner, you can. Order
it.
Yeah.
You can order it crispy. I guess, I've never, I'm always worried about bacon being undercooked. So I would never, but I also don't like it extra crispy. So I just take it as it comes.
Yeah.
I would never say chewy bacon because there's, I don't know.
They know what I mean there. They know what I mean. They're like, they recite my order to me at this point. They know exactly what I want when I'm coming in on Sunday morning. You know,
you're like the norm of the Avalon Diner.
100%. Yes. Yep. Know them all. All right. D'Amico Ryans, moving on from week one, we are. That's what he said yesterday. And all you alarmists who want to fire everybody.
That's the nature of our business, right? That's, man, you lose, fire everybody, trade every player, right? You win, going to the Super Bowl. Like, then the next week, everything, I get it. Like, that's the nature of our business. It's exciting because you have so many different outlets, so many different people have an opinion. So many people love football. So I love the passion. I love the energy that comes with this, right? It's fun, man. We really enjoy this, and we understand the seriousness of it as well, right? But to that point, the realistic point, it's one game. It's week one. The building isn't burning down. It's week one. We go back and we fix what we need to fix, come out and do the things that we can control. That's the main emphasis for this week. How can we just control the controllables and press forward? And now when you have a chance to truly compete, now let's see what happens.
Okay, when it comes to fire everybody, you know, like obviously D'Amico's exaggerating to a certain degree. I think you and I are going to have the same answer. When it comes to people that DM'd you or tweeted at you or were on the text line or people that you just heard shouting it on the street, which player was most universally yelled about in terms of why is this guy still on the team or why is this experiment still going on?
With this version of the Texans?
Yeah, after the game.
I would say, boy, why is this guy still on the team? Damian Pierce.
Yes, yeah, Damian Pierce. Exactly. Yep. That was my first thought. There is a part with Damian where, dropping that screen. At some point, someday, I don't know how long they're willing to play it out with Damian Pierce, and maybe I'm proven wrong on this eventually. I was surprised that he wasn't traded away last year during training camp. I was willing to see that, okay, maybe they really did feel like the scheme was part of the issue and they got to figure out how to make it work with them. But it's just, it's a couple of big runs here and there, which have been nice. But so far after one game, that one got on my nerves a little bit.
Yeah.
And you're in this situation where, yes, Joe Mixon is down. Nick Chubb is looking like he's pretty good. But I'm not super enthusiastic about it.
Okay, you should be happy about this, and we'll get to Tampa Bay in just a second, what D'Amico had to say about the Bucs. But on Texans All Access last night, Seth, or it might have been two nights ago, the YouTube I saw yesterday with Mark and John talking to D'Amico, he alluded to perhaps doing something that you were, I think, kind of almost requesting after the game on Sunday.
Chubb ran the ball really well. We tried to mix it up with the backs. Got Woody some touches. Damian, we're going to try to lean in with Chubb a little bit more. I think he deserves it. He's shown that he continued to get better as the game went on. You saw him running stronger, finishing plays in a physical manner. So we got to get him going a little bit more, right? And I think he can really help us. CJ did a nice job helping that rushing average by scrambling a little bit. Yeah. Such a nice drive there before the 2 minute. I mean, during the 2 minute at half, he did a really nice job scrambling to put himself in position to get points there. So I think offensive line, just stay after it with our double teams, being a hat on a hat, that won't change. We're always want to get a hat on a hat in the run game and really emphasize our wide receivers getting in, blocking the support players, and that'll help our run game continue to thrive.
Okay, everybody's got a block. We know that. More Nick Chubb at the beginning.
More Nick Chubb. You're right. And I didn't know if I wish what he would have said was we have to be really careful with him because, you know, he's still coming back. You know, he's not off of that devastating knee injury from 2 years ago. Even though he played last year, that's a 2-year recovery on that thing. There's a part of me that I get it. You want to, you know, try a bunch of different guys out. But again, I turn into the grumpy old man of like, what was the preseason for?
Right.
What? Why? You get two series with your starters in the preseason, and you know what? You only get 17 regular season games.
Yeah.
And we're going out and we're testing and probing and seeing what we feel good about in week one. Well, going up against a really good defense. Okay, fine. You ran your little experiment. Now, yes, focus on your strengths. And Nick Chubb, out of all those running backs, I know Gumba Wale has always been, I like a Gumba Wale in his role, but not at the expense of Nick Chubb carries at the end of the game.
Yeah, I would submit, Seth, you know, one of the inactives on Sunday was British Brooks. Yeah. I would have British Brooks active ahead of Damian Pierce right now. You know, without question. British Brooks did some good things in the preseason. You know,
I think
he always seems to make things happen when he's out there.
Damian letting the ball roll into the end zone, which becomes a touchback at the 20 instead of the 35.
Yeah.
And then just not doing anything as a runner, but then also dropping that very, very, very catchable hat pass that hit him right in the hands on the key drive there. There's a part of Damian where it's turning into like, this is Jose Altuve's base running, except without the Hall of Fame career behind
yeah,
it. And I don't have an appetite for it right now.
Nope. Here was D'Amico Ryans talking about moving on from week one. We'll do that. We'll look ahead to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Here's D'Amico on Baker Mayfield and the Bucs offense.
The Bucs, one thing I'll say about the Bucs is starting off watching the tape, man. Baker Mayfield he's playing the best he's played in his career. Todd has done a really nice job of working with Baker and the passing game. They were first in the league in passing last year, or they were top five in pretty much all the major offensive categories last year. And it shows they have weapons at receiver. Mike Evans has done it for a long time, continues to shine. The young kid, Igbuka, has done a really nice job making some explosive plays. He showed up big time for them in their game versus Atlanta. And Baker, he does a really nice job of just moving around, scrambling in the pocket, keeping plays alive. You see toughness, you see grittiness from Baker, which allows their passing game to thrive.
So Ibuka, it was a huge role in that game late. I think it was Mike Evans was saying that he wished they'd been mic'd up in the huddle because Ibuka basically was
calling a shot,
requesting a post.
Yep.
And I think it was Mike Evans was saying like, you got this rookie in here, never played before, and he's calling a shot and demanding that they throw him the post, but Ibuka was one of the guys who was still on the board when the Texans started trying to trade up. Right? Yeah. Or had he gone already?
He went before the Texans pick. The Tampa was picking.
No. I know he went before the Texans pick, but Caserio said right around the mid to late teens, he started trying. They were trying to trade up.
He went 19th to Tampa.
Yeah, he was one of the guys that was still on the board.
Yep.
Because there were a few guys that when the Texans are sitting at 25, and Nick said, I think he said around pick 16 or 17, that's when they started calling around about moving up.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, Gray Zabel, the guard, was still on the board. Ibuka was still on the board.
Donovan Jackson was still on
Matthew
the board.
Matthew Golden was still on the board. Donovan Jackson, you know, like the receivers and the offensive linemen that were very interesting were still on the board. So this will be the first time the Texans see one of those guys where you see a little bit of like, what might have been.
What might have been. I guess Donovan Jackson had a really good game on Monday night. I wasn't watching him closely on Monday night. I watched the whole game. But I wasn't watching Donovan Jackson closely, but I guess he had a really good debut with the Minnesota Vikings. Shout out to Episcopal High School and Coach Lease, Donovan Jackson, a proud alum of Episcopal here in Houston.
He was the one that people are down on because he's slew-footed. Sean, do you know what slew-footed means?
I don't.
I didn't either until I saw it. And frankly, it sounded like some kind of ethnic slur that my grandpa would have said about an Irishman back in the day.
I'm a little nervous that you said it on this show.
I know.
If we're being honest.
It means duck-footed.
Okay.
And I'm like, especially for a lineman, interior lineman, offensive or defensive, being duck-footed can actually be a strength. That's a powerful position you're in. You know who else is duck-footed?
Who?
LeBron James. He's done all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. CJ Stroud, a little bit duck-footed.
He's definitely a little bit duck-footed. I would imagine duck-footed, like the angle that your feet are at help you get a nice solid base.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So I always felt like if it was a defensive tackle or an interior offensive lineman is duck-footed, that's a potentially really powerful dude.
Yeah. Not to get too deep into the physics of it, but that feels like you get a nice, a nice base there.
Yeah, slew-footed. I did the same thing. I saw that, and I'm like, slew-footed?
I would have guessed some version of duck-footed or pigeon-toed or whatever, but yeah.
Yeah. Slew-footed. I thought it was like, again, I thought it was something like, you know, no slew-footed need apply or something from back in the day. Yeah.
Okay, if we're prisoners of the moment right now with the Astros and the Texans, I will tell you who the big winner might be in all this, and how do we feel about a Houston legend helping an adversary? We'll talk about that coming up next. But I want to mention that the Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King. I love Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built and protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
So, Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So if we are prisoners of the moment right now, I would say everybody's a little upset with the Texans over losing on Sunday, the way in which they lost, a lot of penalties, people disagree with the O-line shuffling, Nico Collins was hardly targeted. There's some things to be angry about. I think people are upset with the Astros, even though they're in first place, and some of this is not the Astros' fault. Like, they just, a lot of guys are injured. Maybe, who knows? Maybe some of that is the Astros' fault. That's for the medical staff and Jim Crane to determine. But I think it's safe to say, like, people right now are not feeling super confident about the Astros, even though they're in first place by a game, because how things have been going hitting-wise all year and then over the last month, just in general. Since that sweep of the Dodgers, their record is well below 500.
Since that sweep of the Dodgers, yeah, it hasn't been the same. And that also, the fact that there's one thing that obviously the injuries have played a big part of it, but it's the runners in scoring position. It's just game after game after game where this team, which is somewhere around 25th in since the All-Star break and runs scored, I'd rather they not hit at all than to have one of the highest ERAs in the league but be amongst the lowest scorers.
Highest
batting average.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'd rather they just not hit than get all these guys on base.
Than to tease us.
Yeah.
They're teases, Sean.
They are, yeah.
They're run teases.
They're buttoning their shirt right down to the middle of their sternum.
They are.
They're spreading it out a little bit, showing a little cleavage, and then going, nope.
Altuve's got that the tattoo that may or may not be real, kind of showing on his chest a little bit.
Right.
Like, oh, I want to see him come home. Maybe have his shirt ripped off or something.
Nope.
Somebody just bring him home.
No. Just stays on second base. And when he's not staying on second base, he's running into outs, sliding 5 feet short of the base like he did last night. So the reason I bring this up.
On the season, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Let's see. For where they are in the runs scored on the season. Why am I having to scroll so far?
I guess bottom third is what I would guess.
I didn't think they had gotten as bad. Yeah, they're 25th on the season. I said I was trying to be generous because I thought it was since 25th on the season.
What are they in batting average? Are you able to sort on that real quick?
So run scored, they're 25th.
Yep, that sounds
for
right.
The season.
Yes.
The stat must have been they're the second. Yeah, that's right. They're second worst since the All-Star break.
But
they're 25th on the season.
That too sounds right. Yep.
Batting average, don't worry, everybody. They're awesome. They're sixth. Sixth best team in the league in batting average. Yeah. That's got to be your grandpa is jumping jacks in his grave right
now.
Finds out that the Astros have the sixth highest batting average.
Yeah, this should make us all feel stupid for the last 100 years of anybody valuing batting average as a big thing. Sixth in batting average, and I would imagine that correlates to being like last or second to last in the league in batters with running and scoring position. You're sixth in batting average and 25th in runs. You ain't getting any important hits. Yeah. So we're upset with the Astros. We're upset with the Texans. If we're prisoners of the moment, Seth, I was thinking about this yesterday. You know who the big winners are right now? The Houston Rockets. Everybody's upset with the Texans to start the season here. and you're upset with the Astros, I actually went and looked to see when training camp started for the Rockets yesterday. I'm like, well, if the Texans aren't going to satisfy me and the Astros aren't going to satisfy me, if they're going to put me through the ringer and continue to commit penalties and do silly things on the football field, they're not going to get hits with runners in scoring position, then by God, what's the first date that I can watch Kevin Durant play basketball? That's what I need to know. And that's the beauty of the city that we're in right now. When we got the two teams with high expectations not performing, we've got another one coming right down the pipe that has equally high expectations, if not higher expectations, because of the acquisition of Kevin Durant. So Rockets, the countdown, we are 20 days away from Rockets training camp. I just want everybody to know that. There's a chance for the Texans to turn things around on Monday Night Football. There's a chance for the Astros to go out and beat the Blue Jays the next two games, win this series, and put a little margin between them and the Mariners. But in the event that they don't, we've at least got Kevin Durant to save our world 20 days from now.
The Astros, by the way, are they have a 23rd best batting average with runners in scoring position.
That does not feel right. It feels like they should be 38th out of 30.
Yeah, I guess but the disparity between being the sixth best batting average, but then being 23rd with runners in scoring position is pretty stark.
Yep, no doubt. Hey, did you see the, speaking of the Rockets, did you see the footage of Hakeem Olajuwon working out with Victor Wembanyama? Did that happen across your Twitter timeline?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, you know what, Hakeem? You did great things for Dwight Howard. Yeah, I admired all the touch he displayed after working with you. Yeah, sure, whatever. Now, when it comes to Hakeem, the talent developer,
yeah,
whatever.
Okay.
All right. Oh, was LeBron James a bad basketball player before he went to work with you? No. Good luck, Wembanyama.
I am curious how Rocket fans feel about that. Like, if Hakeem Olajuwon, who still is very tied to the team, you know, sits courtside and things like that, you are, I don't know what Wemby is paying Hakeem to do this. Far be it from me to begrudge anybody for trying to go make a buck. I'm assuming that Hakeem is getting paid for this. If he's doing it pro bono, then I've got big problems with this.
I'm guessing when they come to work out with him at his facility, I bet he's got a daily rate of something.
Gotta be,
it's
right?
Probably a pretty good one.
Yeah. But it's up to him to say no to certain clients if he wants to discriminate against San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it. Was he going to get sued by Victor Wembanyama?
It's interesting. I think... you know, there's just way more these days in sports in general of guys working out with other guys.
Too friendly. It's too friendly.
In the summer, yeah. There is something about Hakeem being an old school guy, but that does, you know, have the side gig of making other non-Rockets players in the league better. I was joking, obviously, about criticizing Hakeem at all for anything, including, I mean, he has done some really good work with some NBA players in making their game better, including LeBron James. But, I'm not comfortable with it. No,
I don't like it at all. This is the player that the luck of the ping pong balls landed him in San Antonio in your division, in your very state, and he's supposed to be the next big thing. And we've got the guy who I would say is the biggest sports icon in Houston. I think it's Hakeem Olajuwon, it's Jose Altuve. And then there's a tier below that Andre Johnson and J.J. Watt and Earl Campbell and Nolan Ryan and other guys are in. I think Hakeem Olajuwon is the boss. I think Jose Altuve is the underboss or the consigliere. And if we were doing this FBI mob chart style, I think those are the top two kingpins of the Houston sports mafia world. And he's over there helping Victor Wembanyama out to make him better to potentially beat the Rockets and dominate the NBA. I don't need any of this. Hakeem, you can say no. You can say no to certain clients. Unless you're that hard up that you need to be educating everybody on the ins and outs of basketball, I do not need to see Hakeem Olajuwon working out with Victor Wembanyama.
Did you see that Pat Beverly said that he almost signed with the Rockets this offseason?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't.
He said he recently revealed via stream, I don't know who he is on with, that he's been continuously working out to get back to the NBA, and he's been working out with the Rockets. However, with Houston's cap situation, things haven't worked out. I was this close to signing for the Rockets. That's why I've been in Houston. I've been in Houston working out with the Rockets for the last 2 or 3 weeks. I was really close, but with the cap, they don't have a lot of space, which means they can't really guarantee.
Yeah, yeah.
He's 37 years old now.
He's hung around, man. And,
yeah.
He's hung around a while.
He's not a 22-year-old right out of Russia.
I've not watched a ton of Beverly over the last couple of years, They need some depth at the point guard position right now. I mean, they're really betting heavy on Reed Shepard making a jump here in year two behind Fred VanVleet. Would you take Patrick Beverley back on the squad?
Yeah, at the contract, it sounds like he didn't want to accept.
Yes. Yeah. No, if he wants to do a veteran like the minimum Rockets, deal.
I'm like, okay, honestly, this makes me feel good about the Rockets. They weren't going to splurge for sentimentality's sake or anything.
No.
They just, they said, all right, we give you something that didn't have many of the guarantees that Beverly wanted, then there you go. Yeah.
Text message, is no one going to talk about Jalen Petrie and how he's the weakest part of our secondary?
Oh, okay. We've talked about him a good chunk. Maybe you weren't listening yesterday. We were talking about a lot. I think that was one of the things that people are upset with me about. There's limitations with Jalen Petrie doing what they ask him to do sometimes when he's manned up on guys like Puka Nacua. And I think that, for one, he wasn't on the field for every snap in that game. And I think that there's going to be times where they're going to have to be a little bit more selective in getting him replaced with an actual cornerback in those situations, mm-hmm. or maybe times when C.J. Gardner-Johnson is coming up to be in the slot as opposed to Jalen Petrie. But yeah, we've talked about it a whole bunch.
A lot,
so
yeah.
For however long you've been listening today, I guess we haven't. But it's not like he doesn't have a lot of positives. It's just that he's got some glaring negatives that are hard to disguise. And really smart quarterbacks like Matt Stafford understand and know when those situations are.
Yeah.
So how do you manage that part of it?
Game on the line, 3rd and 8. He knew exactly where 5 was.
Well, and even there, that's a matter of, man, everybody bit on the run. On 3rd and 8, it's 3rd and 8, and I think they're thinking, understandably well, the Rams want to run the clock out.
Yes.
But it's not a given on 3rd and 8 that they're going to run no matter what, and everybody bit hard on the play action. That it wasn't like he would have had to been – he wouldn't have to be – one of the best cover corners in the league or anything to cover Puka Nacua for about 1 second as he worked his way toward the sideline if he hadn't bit so hard on the play.
Well, if any team was going to go unconventional and throw there instead of non-conservative there, the conservative thing would have been to hand the ball off, force the Texans to empty their timeouts. If any team was going to do it, it was going to be boy wonder play caller with experienced quarterback who has the ultimate chain mover as his wide receiver right there.
The other part of that play, too, the play that sealed it for the Rams, was that Kalen Bullock bit real hard also. Yeah. And I think it still would have been tough for him to come out and prevent the first down, but he didn't even have a chance.
Nope.
Because he took about 3 or 4 steps in the other direction before he turned and would have been able to help out with Puka Nacua. So it was partly Jalen Petrie, but in general, the defensive backs in that game, they really got abused in play action.
Yeah.
Stafford was – I'm a little skeptical of this stat because the stat I saw was that Stafford was 9-for-10 on play action attempts.
I saw that,
I don't
too.
Trust the computer on that one because I think there was at least one more incompletion. But regardless, you remember the plays that they got burned on play action, the touchdown play.
Yep.
They were just – as D'Amico said after the game, they got to have better eye discipline in those moments.
Did you see CJ's numbers against the blitz and under pressure in that game?
Oh, yeah, it was like the best completion percentage over expected when pressured in his career.
Yeah.
Well, no, and that's, again, this is where some of the hiccups early on as CJ's getting used to the system were evident in that game, and that he still made some really, really, really impressive throws in that game. I think what he's going to continue to get better at is understanding, and especially if he has more time at the line of scrimmage, if everybody operates with a little bit more urgency, is how to dial up the easy throws. Mm-hmm. I think there were a couple opportunities where if he had diagnosed the blitz beforehand, he could have had some shots to even just over the middle, not deep shots to Nico Collins. Some of that, and that's to be expected. I'm not panicking over that because as I've told you guys for like 5 months, there's a lot of moving parts when you're having the quarterback do this. I don't care that he did it in high school. It's not the same damn thing. So it's going to take a little while. So I'm being patient with it. CJ still did do a lot of the really, really impressive things that show off his natural talent.
All right, there's a clear leader in the clubhouse 1 week in to the Payne and Pendergast head coach death pool between me and Seth. Who got the first head coach? Who picked the first head coach to be fired this season? I've got audio that says that I've got the 2 best candidates right now in my pool. We'll have that for you coming up next. I want to remind you that this is a huge effort here at Odyssey Houston today to get books in the hands of kids in low-income houses. 79% of Houston kids, low-income houses. 61% don't have books in their homes. A $30 donation to the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation gives one child in Houston their own home library. Six new books of their own. Text new books, that's N-E-W books, all one word, to 41444 today to donate and help us help Houston kids. All donations this morning are matched by Reliant up to $10,000.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Payne and Pendergast. Seth and I did our NFL head coach death pool last week. We each pick four coaches with the effort being to find the one that gets fired first. Seth won last year. He had Robert Saleh in his four. I don't know that either of us have won in the other years because they've been so out of left field. We've been doing this for 3 or 4 years now. I don't think either of us had Urban Meyer a few years ago.
Right. Yeah. And it's been teams are not firing coaches in season nearly as much as they used to.
No.
So, I don't. This year, though, feels like you might have it in the bag.
Early on. Now, things can change. The odds are out on who the next head or who the first head coach fired is going to be. And Mike McDaniel, and we'll play why here in just a second, took a huge leap. He was already the favorite at 2-1. After 1 week, after watching his team quit and watching him not really have any good explanation for it, he is now 1-4. Not 4-1, 1-4, -400 to be the first head coach fired. I have him. I also have Brian Callahan, who turns out doesn't know the rule book. So I feel right. Now, my other two are Jonathan Gannon, who's 1-0, and Shane Steichen, who beat the crap out of Mike McDaniel. Those don't look like great picks right now. For just for comparison's sake, Seth has Kevin Stefanski, Dave Canales, Brian Daboll, Raheem Morris, all of whom lost their first games of the season. So you're the record of your coaches is 0-4. So from that standpoint, you're looking good. I actually had a couple coaches who won. But boy, the two that I had that lost did not acquit themselves well after their respective games, either after the games or the day after. Mike McDaniel was asked the day after losing 33-8 in the season opener against the Colts if there were any positives to come out of the game.
I think the positive is that that was a miserable experience. It was embarrassing, flat out. And in that, there's nowhere to hide. You know, I was really looking forward to seeing the stuff that we've really worked on diligently, and I didn't see any of it, and that's a problem. You know, I would say the good news and the positive is I don't see how it could be worse, and I also believe in the coaches and players to get it fixed.
When you're positive, your big positive is I don't see how it could get any worse. It's a bad spot, man.
Yeah, and like him just trying to be cute again. It's like him being glib. Like glibness really has a short shelf life in times of adversity.
Yes,
unless you're genuinely funny. If you're being the class clown or something can be a great source of strength. When things are tough, but not in the style that he does it.
No,
honestly, there too. It's like, all right, but seriously, what can you build on? You don't give us any kind of substantive answer. You can't point to some of the positives from the actual game. Yeah, all right, man.
So he's the favorite right now. Now Brian Callahan has jumped up the board. He was 18-1 to start the season. He's now 10-1 after doing this. There was a 23-yard pass to Elik Aramayor, the rookie wide receiver out of Stanford, where clearly his elbow lands in bounds before he went out of bounds.
Yeah.
One elbow equals 2 feet. Well, don't tell Brian Callahan that. He didn't even challenge. The referees missed the call. He could have challenged it. He didn't challenge it. Here was his explanation after the game.
Is there a challenge on the Isle Manor play where they moved out of bounds on the sideline? It looked like his elbow hit inbounds first.
Yeah, you got to get a foot inbounds too. which we didn't have a clean look at whether his foot was down as well. An elbow doesn't equal 2 feet, so his foot would have had to come down as well. We didn't have a clean look, so the call from upstairs was that, you know, it wasn't worth challenging.
Okay. He took a lot of heat. And the people upstairs for him should be taking some heat, too. Someone should have.
Yeah. Right? I wonder if somebody. That could be the kind of thing where he might have thought, like, yeah, for sure that's in there. Like, some idiot upstairs said, no, coach, actually.
Yeah.
It's like his brother-in-law or something.
Old man working for him, so it might be a family operation.
Yeah, but at least his father is extremely qualified.
That's true.
He might have his wife's cousin up there in the booth or something saying, like, actually, it's that's only one knee equals 2 feet. Either way, though. Like, you're an offensive head coach, especially. Hey, come on. This isn't like some arcane part of the rule book.
No,
or anything.
Dude. John
this
Madden,
comes up quite a bit.
John Madden wrote a book that said one knee equals 2 feet. And I know this is an elbow, not a knee, but you've got to know the rule, man.
Now, in that book, which I read a long, long time ago, if I recall properly, Madden admitted to not knowing the rule when the situation came up. Now, that was back in the days of standard definition television and everything.
Sure, yeah.
And basically, you couldn't even be aware of which team was playing on either side. Go watch some old clips on YouTube. I don't know how we watched sports back then.
Madden was literally discussing a receiver who probably left the field and lit up a cigarette on the sidelines.
Yeah.
That's how long ago
it
was.
No, yeah, that's a bad one. I don't know, though, man. I'm, you know, I was a little bit... I've got Brian Daboll, and the part where I was hesitant to take Brian Daboll is it seems like neither he nor the GM are ever going to get fired, no matter what they do. But this week, I saw so many Giants fans posting highlights of Daniel Jones and saying, hey, aren't we supposed to have an offensive genius as the head coach of this team? And why is Daniel Jones looking like this under Shane Steichen and never did necessarily under Brian Daboll? Because even Daniel Jones, like, really good season wasn't actually all that great of a season.
Right.
You know, and as soon as Saquon Barkley was banged up in that season, Daniel Jones fell off a cliff. So I think that Daniel Jones, I don't know what his ceiling is or what he is, you know, completely and totally as a quarterback, but he looked good in week one versus the Colts. His really good season that people like to point to, 3,200 yards passing, 15 touchdowns, 5 interceptions in 2022.
Yeah.
Like, that's not that great, man.
What did he have? Do you have the numbers in front of you?
You want rushing touchdowns,
I'm curious about rushing.
I mean, that's the big thing on Sunday. He had 2 rushing touchdowns and 1 passing touchdown.
Yeah,
I hate looking for rushing stats.
Oh, don't worry, babe. If you don't have it in front of you, don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, no, I've got his stat sheet pulled up, but you have to scroll down to rushing and receiving.
Oh, no worries.
So he had, let's see. Oh, wow. Oh, no, that was in his career. He had 7 rushing touchdowns that year.
Okay,
so 22 total touchdowns.
Yeah, which is, you know, that's it's about what CJ had his rookie year. When he was rookie of the year.
Which is a really good rookie year.
Really good rookie year,
but not necessarily like an awesome year for a veteran quarterback.
That was year 4 for Daniel Jones, so you're absolutely right. People weighing in, Seth, on the Hakeem working out with Wemby situation.
Oh, yeah.
That I was completely upset with. Yeah.
I'm curious about this. Yeah.
Someone says Hakeem is the one wearing a wire.
Ooh. Yeah, what if he gives him bad coaching tips?
Well, that was another one. As long as he's teaching him the wrong things, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
Teach him a Euro step. He's like, actually, the Euro step, you Americans think the Euro step is one big step. Actually, it's best when done in 4 steps.
Right. Yes. Right.
I'm going to teach you the 4-step Euro step.
Why does Wemby keep getting called for traveling this year? So he was taught. And then someone says, I think probably what a lot of Rocket fans feel, the dream is the best to ever do it. He can do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah, that's where I kind of am with it. I'm like, it's one of those things where you're like,
I don't have to like it. I don't have to like it, but I get it.
You know what he needs? He needs to teach him the dream underhook. That's the dream hook is one thing, but the dream underhook, unstoppable. when performed correctly.
Literally underhand. Oh, my God. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula, they are here. They are in the loop, fellas.
Hi there.
What's going on?
I'm going to be a little bit of a jerk, as I'm wont to do from
like
time to time.
3 days in a row you've prefaced things with being a jerk.
That's right. Like I said, I want to do this. Mm-hmm. You were mentioning how, you know, the way that this season has started, the way the Astros are going, you could easily just look over and be like, hey, man, the Rockets are the one that I look to.
20 days.
20 days. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it as well. I feel like you might have an opportunity to have some of those feelings as well when you go, hey, where's the half-court offense?
Oh, it'll take me 1 week to be to be the way I am on these other two.
Just
teams.
Wanted to temper expectations, but also I'm killing the hopium, which is, you know, really vivid in this time period headed into any season.
It's hard to vanquish hope with me. Vanquish hope. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm easily sold to. The Texans could. D'Amico was making me hopeful again today, playing some of his cuts. I'm easily sold to, for sure. Crosstalk is brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. I should mention as well that we are trying to get new books into the hands of kids in low-income homes here in Houston. 61% of the homes here in Houston with kids in it do not have books. And we know the correlation with literacy, crime, mental health. The more literate we are as a city, the better we're going to be as a city. A $30 donation gives one child in Houston their own home library, 6 new books of their own that they get to pick out. Text new books, N-E-W, books, all one word, to 41444 today to donate and help us help Houston kids. All donations this morning are matched by Reliant up to $10,000. I don't know where we are with the total tally yet, if we're at 10,000 or not. I know we got big goals for this thing here, but just know that up to $10,000, if you're donating 30, Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation, which is the cause here.
Yeah.
They're getting 60, so that's a good thing. Yeah, we love the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation.
Yeah,
we love
it. I was just walking in the hallway, and we got the whole thermometer as we track our to our goal as on Odyssey Houston Cluster. And I believe last time I checked, which was about an hour ago, I think we were about 20%. So okay. We're doing all right, but yeah. we got a ways to go to try and help.
More
the
work to do. Yeah, yeah, more work to do for sure. So along those lines, I know the question of the day is tied to
We're
the
topical, man.
Yeah, of course you are.
We're always topical. What did you grow up reading that had the biggest impact on you? Because
we're looking at you, Seth.
I mean, me personally, my entire career, you know, based on the weekly reader.
Your own books?
Do you remember the weekly reader?
I do remember the weekly reader.
It would come in the mail.
Yeah, the weekly reader.
And that
reader.
Was the coolest thing ever. Yeah, yeah. I was like in third grade and just waiting for that Wednesday mail so I could get my weekly reader. And Sports Illustrated, of course.
So Sports Illustrated was a big one for me. Growing up, I mean, I think I was still growing up when I was in college. But for purposes of this exercise, you know what I loved?
Mm-hmm.
The National.
Oh, Frank, been me.
Frank DeFord.
Yeah,
did you? I feel like, did you get an offer by the National?
I got offered by the National, by Frank DeFord. I was in his office.
Frank DeFord. And for those who don't know what it is, very short-lived.
Yeah.
It was around for maybe a year and a half,
mm-hmm.
but it was while I was in college. And we used to have, next to the apartment I lived in, we had a machine, like a newspaper machine.
Yeah.
With the National in it. Mm-hmm. And I used to walk down there every day. I'd buy 50 cents
fantastic.
In or whatever.
It was great. Sustainability.
Just didn't make any money. Yeah. It was hired... high-priced people like John Lopez
and others.
I know.
The two biggest sports books that spring to mind were, one, you guys might be surprised to know this, when I was a wiry young kid, before I'd had my growth spurt, I dreamed of being a cyclist in the Tour de France. That's
really?
Not a joke. I was a skinny kid, and I saved up all my money from working on the farm to buy a Cannondale road bike and everything. This was back when Greg LeMond was the non-doped Tour de France winner for the United
non-doped.
States. It's a big deal. But I read his book, The Complete Book of Bicycling, and the one thing that stuck out and still sticks out in my mind today was he pointed to the ability to suffer is one of the best athletic traits you can have, and that if you can out-suffer people and just keep performing when you're miserable and get yourself to a spot where you're more miserable than anybody else, you can beat people that might be more talented than you.
So I always
took that with me. And then the other one was there was a book called Mental Toughness Training for Sports by Jim Lehrer, who's a sports psychologist. And I read that going into my fifth year in the NFL, and it kind of just flipped everything. He has like a training facility. He works mostly with tennis players and golfers, but it was in Orlando, and I was playing in Jacksonville at the time. I actually went down and like spent a week there like training down there and everything, and that was kind of transformative for me. It turned me into a completely different football player.
It really did. That's a great story.
That's really good. That's really good.
And I read probably four or five Dan Jenkins books.
Okay.
Just big time.
Yeah. Do you have a book, Reggie?
I do, but just hearing Seth, I was like, man, I was reading the things that I was assigned.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I could think about some of the things that I read as a youth, but actually recently, what's coming to mind is actually thinking about reading, Boys Will Be Boys, especially since that has come up recently by Jeff Perlman.
That's been relevant,
The Jordan Rules.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good
Jordan Rules is one of those ones that I've been thinking about a lot lately as well. Just, I love the opportunity to get that insight that is embedded like that. Obviously, Friday Night Lights. I'm a big dude who's like, book is better than the movie, because I do think that like being embedded in those instances, having the opportunity to do like real journalism, give us an opportunity to see the inside of the locker room in a way that even the reporters of the day aren't able to get. Just getting some of that insight has been so like valuable in telling the stories of what's happening with players, telling the stories of what the interpersonal relationships are, and giving us a better idea of not just kind of the 30,000 foot view that we typically get when we talk about sports, but like some of the actual interworkings that help us understand how this stuff works.
That's good. That's good.
Reginald, you know what you got to go seek out? It's because I'm reading this the autobiography of Dan Gable, or it's like a book of stories of by Dan Gable, who is an Olympic wrestler, or awesome, one of the best college wrestlers of all time. But when he was a coach at Iowa, when he first started coaching, this young author who was in the MBA or in the master's program at the University of Iowa for writing came up to him after practice one day and said, "Hey, do you mind if I work out with you sometimes? I'm a writer here. I was a college wrestling captain and everything, but I'm a writer." So he followed Dan Gable around and ended up doing this article in Esquire that was just really got a lot of praise, doing all those things that you just talked about, kind of following him around and just picked up on all this detail and everything. That young author was John Irving, who would go on to be one of the most successful novelists of the previous century. But he was also like, it was really good sports writing, just in profiling a guy.
And of course, I'm getting into like some of the, oh man, I got to a better understanding of the interpersonal workings in West Texas, or a better understanding of like who Michael Jordan is. And then also as I'm doing that, I think about, and I feel bad because I don't remember who had the byline, but a story of someone who went to Oakland and just hung out with Marshawn Lynch, and how Marshawn made them take a shot of Hennessy before they even like got to their ride along or anything they did.
That had to be amazing.
But like things like that, just more personalization and more humanization of the dudes that we love seeing do incredible stuff on the field and on the court, just getting a feel for who they are. Or like how Mina Kimes sat down with Aaron Rodgers for that long form piece where it's like, oh, I better understand who this person is.
My favorite book of all time was an autobiography written by Mick Foley, wrestler, who's Cactus Jack and Mankind. Yeah, yeah. And he's written 5 books since then that are autobiographical. But this was about his biography of growing up and coming up through the ranks in wrestling, and eventually became a huge star in WWE. And it's called Have a Nice Day, which is like his catchphrase, a tale of blood and sweat socks. He wrote it. He did not have a ghostwriter. Mm-hmm. He wrote it himself, handwritten, in notebooks while flying across the country to all the wrestling shows.
That's
he was doing.
Great.
He wrote, he walked into the publisher and handed them a stack of notebooks and said, "Here's my book." And if you know anything about Mick Foley, those planes he was on where he's writing that stuff, he was in pain.
Yeah.
Because that dude abused his body. Yeah. He was the one that got thrown off the top of the cage.
Yep. Like, yeah, the cage.
It is a phenomenal. I read this book. I'm like, you don't even need to be a wrestler. He's really funny for one thing, but he's a great storyteller. That's my favorite book ever. I've read that book four. I don't know if I've read 10 books in my whole life. I've read that book 4 times.
And it, to me, it's really funny, and this ties in with what we're doing today. Like, listening to you three guys, it is a testament to who you are. Like Seth with the, you know, feeling the pain and
ability to suffer.
And what did he become? You with the inside, you know, knowledge. You with the wrestling and the funny and all that. And mine was always just like Dan Jenkins, John Steinbeck.
Yeah.
Just how they turned a phrase.
Yes.
Which kind of was a reflection of you. On what I became.
Yes,
you know,
like, for sure.
I just love the way they wrote, the way they said things.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense, man.
Yeah.
And by the way, I've read more than 10 books. I just want to be clear on 11? This day where we're highlighting. No. I read plenty back in school back in the day. No, I used to, my first book I ever read, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I was 3 years old, man.
How about
Roald Dahl.
Really?
Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah, I was a really good reader when I was a kid.
What happened?
Yeah,
I wasn't going to do it. Not on the day where we're trying to encourage literacy.
I was a good artist, too. I used to be able to draw back in the day.
Oh, I wish I could draw.
Yeah, I used to be able to draw, yeah.
I could tell the other side of the coin, too, is like when I read On the Road and dropped out of high school 2 weeks later.
Hopefully we don't have the babies doing that. Like, hopefully when we get them their individual libraries.
Let's get these books in their hands, people, all right? Text new books to 844-843-6444. All right, fellas, the floor is yours. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies, and may you not somehow in your mind mix up the Dream Shake and the Skyhook all in one sentence like I did 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm a lost cause. It's all good.
No, I did. Usually I rely on you to correct me on things like that, but I think you're a little scared of me today. So
Probably. All right, we are done. We are out of time. You're listening to KLT AM, KLT FM HD2, Houston, an Odyssey sports station.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.